All right. Well, it's now my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker. And so please give a nice warm Visalia Alano Club welcome to Amy from Hanford.
Good evening, and thank you for asking me to come. I'm Amy, and I am an alcoholic. I'm going to tell my story just because I think when I was first sober, that's what I needed to hear. I needed to relate to other people who drank like I did, because I certainly thought I was the only one that hid drinks and did all those wonderful things. So here goes. I was raised in a normal family. My parents were social drinkers. We had it in the house. Nothing crazy ever went on, though. I reached my teenage years, and I really believe that every alcoholic, their alcohol is a symptom to our problem. And it took me years to figure out what my problem was. And I started drinking as a teenager. My first drink was with a babysitter. It was my brother's girlfriend, and she was supposed to be watching me. And she gave me a malt back, and I loved it. And I was 14 at the time, and it was on at that point. I was always a good student in school. You know, I always had the grades. I did what I was supposed to do. When I was 14, I awoke one morning to my mother crying. I heard her crying hysterically. And my mom had back problems, so I thought maybe something was going on with her back. And my dad opened up my bedroom door. It was really early, probably like 5 a.m. And he opened the bedroom door, and he said, your brother shot himself. And I remember sitting up, and I said, well, is he dead? And he said, yes. And he shut the door and went back to my mother. And I flopped back down in bed, and I remember the first thing I thought of was, I have to call my carpool ride. I lived out in the country, and at that point didn't have a driver's license, so we were being carpooled. Life as I knew it at that point pretty much changed. My parents had a dairy farm, and the brother that killed himself was working with my dad. He was interested in the dairy. The other brother, my middle brother, was into truck driving. He had trucks. He wasn't so interested in it. So that made my dad go back out and really have to work on the dairy, and it pretty much sent my mother into bed. She went into a severe depression. She had good days. I can't say that she didn't have good days, but for the most, a lot of them were very bad. So at 14, I learned how to do payroll. I learned how to, back then, my dad could sign a check, and I could go to Save Mart and buy what I needed in Hanford and take the back roads and get on home. So I had a lot of responsibility by then. And I wasn't really watched too closely. Plus, I was a late-in-life child. I believe I was an oop. I was the only girl. I was spoiled. And with all this other stuff going on, no one was really watching me. Everyone kind of had their own thing going on. And so life just continued. As I said, I did well in school. I never played sports. I was a really good athlete in junior high, and even the high school coaches asked me to play, but I didn't want to put that time in, because that would take away from my party time. You know, for gosh sakes, they have practice every day. I didn't want to do that, you know. So I kind of always just did the bare minimum to get by. So I'm progressing. I have a high school boyfriend, you know. I thought he and I were going to run off and get married. He was the one, and another wonderful morning, my mom comes in and wakes me up and says, you need to get up immediately. And I said, well, what is it? Well, David's been hit by a car. I said, what? Well, we'll go to the hospital. Let's go. Well, he died 3 days later. And so I had that going on. And at the time, I didn't realize how devastating that was to me, but it was very, very devastating. And it took till I was in rehab to understand how and why. After, at that point, it was on. The party was on. I'd try anything. I drank like a fish. My parents were traveling. I still had a grandmother that was alive, my mom's mom, and so she was in the Sacramento, Lodi, actually, that area. And so my parents would go there about once a weekend. The parties were at my house. I was the party girl. That's what I did. And I didn't care if I lived or died. I didn't care. I thought, you know, this is just too much. I graduated high school, got involved with an older guy, and I was all set to go to school at the coast. I was going to go over to Cal Poly, and this older guy told me, what are you going to go to school for? You know, my family, look, we've got a dairy, we've got this, we've got that, you're never going to have to work, I want to marry you. And I thought, well, that kind of sounds okay, I guess. You know, when you're young, you think, hey, he was buying me presents, and I thought all was well. And about that time, my mom was sick. She got sick and didn't get better. And they diagnosed her with pneumonia. She didn't get better. She didn't get better. Finally, it was lung cancer. And after 13 months of her fighting it, she passed away. So in the realm of 5 years, I lost three important people to me. And I never really dealt with that. I went ahead and I got married. We drank socially. That man that I married had been to rehab before, but his family never pulled me aside and said, you know, he's got a cocaine problem. And you probably shouldn't drink with him, and you probably shouldn't do this. No one ever thought to do that with me. So here I am, you know, and I'm 19 when I got married. And we're just, you know, living. Actually, we moved to my dad's ranch. At that point, my mom lived just shortly till after I was married and then passed. But I wanted to be near her, so we were living on my dad's ranch. And, you know, life's rolling along. Well, you know, he's drinking, he's using, we're partying, and it wasn't getting any better. Well, we decided we were going to have a baby. So I straightened up, you know, baby sticks every day. And so I straightened up, and I got pregnant, and he never stopped. He never stopped using the nerve. And so, you know, he'd be in a rehab, and I'd be working, and my insurance would be paying it, and I'm writing checks, and he'd be good for 6 months, and he'd screw up again. And this went on and on. I had female problems, so I thought, I was young, and I knew I'm never remarrying again besides it, you know. But I thought, I want another baby. You know, because when you're young, they're cute. And when they're little, they're cute. And so I went ahead and had another baby. And I always worked. I was the one that kind of kept everything together. He worked for his father on their dairy farm. And it just got unbelievable. After my son was born, I was so codependent and so sick. By the time I left him, I barely weighed, I think I weighed like 108 pounds. I didn't know which end was up, and I was lucky he didn't kill me. You know, he had cocaine psychosis so bad, he'd walk around at night with guns. Just the craziness of it all. And I remembered in my head, my father always knew something wasn't right over there. You know, he'd come and he'd tell my brother, something's not right with your sister. Well, Dad had always told me, I'll help you, but none of that back and forth stuff, one time. So I always thought in my head, okay, I got to make sure. And I wanted a family. I wanted us to be together, you know, but he wanted to hide up in the attic naked. So I was to a point that what can I say? And so I decided that's probably not for me. And so when I left that man, I had two kids. He had lost his job finally. His dad cut him off. He lived on his dad's ranch at this point. I had two kids, $212 in my checking account, and I drove away in what was my mom's car at that point. And I had to start completely over. But when I started completely over, the thing was, it was just as difficult to be divorced from this man as it was to be married to him. And I was very blessed at my work at that time. I had a great, great principal, and he was wonderful to me. And because at one point I had to go away and just get with family for a bit to get away from him. But that goes on and on. But at this point, you know, I rent my own little house, and I'm doing my own thing. Well, my nerves were always shot. I had fought anxiety my whole life. And I was drinking. Well, I was home alone now with two little kids. They were 5 and 17 months. And I didn't have to report to anyone. So I drank. I just started smoking cigarettes. I'd sneak outside. My mom died of lung cancer. But I thought, well, you know, I drink at night. Or I'd also go outside and smoke one occasionally. So I did that. But my drinking increased. And that's what I did. And I thought it was okay. And I remember through those years when my kids were little, I think, damn, I drink too much. But, oh, you know, the group I hung with drank just like I did. I had a very dear friend. Her husband is a correctional officer, still is. He worked swing shifts, so that was our routine. We worked together. He worked weekends, so we were good moms, we thought, because we got together and we fed those kids and bathed them and we drank and we threw a movie in for them, you know, what more could they want? We were great moms. And that just continued. I was single for a lot of years, and then all of a sudden this guy comes along and, hey, would you like to get married? You know, kind of, it was pretty quick, almost like that. And so I thought, you know, this guy was just so tired of fighting my ex-husband still, because he was constantly wanting the kids or doing this. I was in court all the time. And, you know, that did not relent at all. And so I thought, well, you know, this guy was kind of a knight in shining armor. He whisked in, he wined and dined me, we traveled, and I thought, okay, this is a good deal. I'm going to go ahead and marry this guy. So I did, and it seems like at that point, then I wasn't drinking to relax. I was drinking almost because it was like, oh, finally, everything's off me. I don't have to worry anymore. This guy, you know, financially we were pretty set. I always work still, but it's just like, he deals with the crazy ex. Everything was okay, but I kept drinking. And I like to take Xanax along with those because I just, I don't know, they're fun. And so along with that, you know, I always had these bouts of anxiety. And I would go to the doctor, but there was such a stigma. In my 20s, I remember, I thought I was going crazy. I was having panic attacks. I couldn't go to the grocery store unless I was drunk. But I just thought, it's just a phase. You know, other people must go through this. And so occasionally I would go to the doctor and I would get a prescription, but I didn't want to take it. I didn't want the stigma of it. So if I was in real dire straits, I'd have to take a pill occasionally. But other than that, I self-medicated with my alcohol. So it continued on, and guess what? I started getting sick. I started getting pretty sick. And the kids were getting older, and with my husband at that time, he, with his business, we had the opportunity to travel. The man from Hawaii, I got to go to Hawaii at least twice a year for years. And we drank. That's what we did. He was on call over there. So as soon as, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock rolled around and he wasn't on call anymore, we'd start drinking. And that's the way my life was going. But pretty soon, you know, I'm drinking at home all the time, too. And he's asking me about it. You know, you're drinking a lot. Well, so what? You know, I was never much of a bar drinker. I stayed home. And people started getting resentful because I just kept drinking. The kids were starting to notice a lot. My two best partners to drink with were the girlfriend I talked about, that her husband was a correctional officer. And she was the one I would call if there was a problem, or if, you know, the husband was really mad. I knew I could call her, and she'd say, oh, whatever. You know, she would condone my behavior. And I had another person in my life that would do that, and that was my sister-in-law, my brother's wife. We were drinking buddies. You know what? When I walked into her house, she didn't ask. She got the wine out. My niece, who's now in sixth grade, was just 3, maybe littler, talking. She knew when she saw me, T.T. want wine? That's what came out of her mouth. And I thought that was the cutest thing when she was little. But that's how it was. So whenever I needed some backup on my behavior or the family getting pissed at me, those were the two people I could call and talk to. And yeah, everything was, oh, they'll get over it. You know, that happens to me. I always just needed clarification that, I needed to be around people that drank like I did. But, you know, the thing is, my drinking continued, and it continued, and I was having shakes, and I was having panic attacks, and I would take Xanax, and I got to where I carried Xanax around in my pocket, and I would chew them, because that would counteract, they're both depressants, you know, alcohol is a depressant, the Xanax is a depressant, so they counteracted each other. So when I was having a withdrawal that was so horrible, and I thought I was dying, I could chew one of those, and I'd feel kind of better. So it was just a vicious, vicious cycle. My kids were starting to really notice, and they were sick of it. They were sick of mom being drunk. My daughter was a freshman in high school. My kids were both very athletic. My daughter played varsity her freshman year in basketball and volleyball. I was the drunk mom in the stands. And I thought I hit it pretty well, you know, but my daughter knew. And I would get loud. and she didn't like it. And my kids always, I was always the house, the kids could have friends over. It was to the point they weren't doing that. And the worst thing of all, they were talking about moving in with Dad. At this point in my life, this guy fought me. I had been through three attorneys. I paid up the yin-yang for all this, and these little bastards are going to go live with their dad now? I mean, honestly, I couldn't believe it. I thought, what the hell with you, right? I thought, you little ungrateful brat. I buy you skateboards, you've got the best shoes, you've got your hair, you know, you've got highlights in your hair, you've got everything you want, you know, we live in a nice home. But they were threatening to leave. And I said, okay, that's fine. Just go. Maybe it'll do you good. Well, the husband was getting real tired, too. And my drinking was overtaking my life. The obsession was there, I can tell you. A typical evening for me. I thought I was quite the wine connoisseur. I belonged to wine clubs. I loved to go wine tasting. But I started buying these boxes of wine because you really can't see how much is in there. And, you know, the kids would even say you buy that because you can't see what's in there. No, no, it's just on sale. And so that's how I was going. I would get through my school day, barely. I started missing a lot of work. I'd get through my school day, and I would think, I remember thinking at work, oh, God, I'm not going to drink again. I'm not going to drink today, as we all do. Then by noon, I'd eat. And I thought, I felt a little better, feeling human again. Well, then by 3 o'clock, I'm thinking, okay, I can get out of here by 3:30 probably, go get my drink on a little bit before any of the kids got home or before I had to go pick them up. And I love, that's another thing, I love to drink and drive. You know, and I like to sing while I was doing that, too. And so that was my thing. And it started, the obsession was there, the obsession to drink. So I lived in this two-story house, and my neighbor directly behind me was in the same floor plan, but we're flip-flop, right? So I know his floor plan. And so he's always upstairs in his office. I could see him at his computer every night. And I'm down in the family room because by after dinner, because I'd start drinking, you know, when I got home from work, and I cooked, God knows what it tasted like, because I never ate. I got to where I was very, you know, I hardly ate anything towards the end. I was just drinking, and I was always watching my weight, you know, and gosh, I was putting this weight on, couldn't figure out why. So that's another thing I did. I obsessed about exercising. I would punish myself on the treadmill, and then I would be on that treadmill sweating, ready to pass out, and I'd think, I worked all that out. Hey, I'll have a glass of wine. You know, it was just an evil, evil thought process. But back to my neighbor, after dinner time, you know, the kids went upstairs to the loft, the grouchy husband, because he's grouchy at this point. He went to his office or upstairs to bed. Well, I didn't want to close my blinds because I knew that man that I never really talked to before. I knew he watched me. And I didn't want him to know how much I drank. So I casually go over the fridge and from that box of wine, and I'd go back over and I'd look. I mean, I was obsessed. I think I'm a pretty smart person, but I was obsessed with this man. I was worried he was watching me, but I didn't want to close my blinds either because then he'd really know, duh, she's just there drinking again tonight. So I would do this. I would not. It was this game I played every night. Every night. And the other thing is getting rid of your bottles. That was tough because Janet, on the other side of me, you know, she's pretty tough cookie, grandma raising her kid, and I wanted her to think highly of me. And so it was a big turmoil how to get rid of the boxes of wine and the glass or the bottles of wine and the this and the that and the, you know, on and on. So needless to say, it took up a lot of my time. Yeah. It took up a lot of my time. So then, pretty soon, I'm drinking, and you know what? I'm drinking till 11:30, 12 at night. The alarm goes off to get up for work, and I'm shaking. And so I'm trying to drink some wine. Well, that wine takes a while to kick in, so I had to start buying some vodka. Every good alcoholic has to get some vodka at some point in their life. And so I have to get that vodka, you know, to kind of help me. Well, I always thought if I have to drink in the morning, then I'm an alcoholic. So I really, for a long time, I fought it, and I would go to work so hungover, I don't know how I didn't pass out, really. I remember the morning I took my drink before work, and I made that little screwdriver, and I looked at it, and I thought, yeah, you're an alcoholic. At this point, it was about May, And I thought, okay, when school's out, I'm going to straighten myself up. I can do this. But this is just to get me through the school. So I started drinking in the morning. And that took a lot of work because I'd buy those little bottles of vodka. Well, I had to go to special stores because I didn't want to run into parents from school or anybody else that might see me buying this vodka. And then you had to get rid of those bottles. It was, oh, God. And so it was a lot to occupy my time. And I figured out, because for women, I don't know, but men don't usually go in the laundry room. And so I knew to hide. I could hide bottles in the washing machine because nobody looks in there. And then it took so much time the night before that I would make my morning drink and set it in the laundry room in a cabinet. So all I had to do on my way out was get the ice and put it in. So I would drink that drink all the way to work, finish it in the parking lot at school, and pop some pills, and then I would make it through the day. And but remember, I was only going to do this until school was out, and I was really going to straighten up. Well, I don't know how I didn't get in trouble at school. I didn't. School got out, and I didn't stop drinking. I kept drinking. And I kept drinking. And pretty much the last 2 weeks of my life prior to stopping, I do not remember. My last hoorah, I like to call it, I disappeared. I got pissed off about something, and it happened to be on a day that I was, my sister-in-law, my good drinking partner, was turning 40. Now 40, I think. And it was her, we were giving her a surprise birthday party, and I was in charge of it. And I took off and went to Lodi that day. The night before, I was mad. I couldn't tell you why I was mad, but I did. Drunk as a skunk, took off down to 99, and called my godmother there, and I said, I'm coming to see you. Okay, well, I was going to go get a facial. Well, sign me up, too. I get to her house, and I just pass out. So the next morning, she has a little talk with me. Of course, I've already had vodka in my room at her house, because how am I going to get up to talk to her? You know? She said, you think you ought to go back and help out with that party? And I said, yeah, you're probably right. And I left her house like at 10 a.m. and I took off, and my phone rang. It was my ex-husband, the children's dad, Amy. The kids say you've been drinking a lot. Well, yeah, I have been. You know why? Because my marriage and blah, 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 blah. And that's the last I remember. I hung up with him, and I do remember pulling in to get gas, and I bought more vodka. And pumpkin seeds. I do remember pumpkin seeds. So, you know, I had to eat a little something. And so I took off. And by the time I returned back to Hanford, oh, also, I have to back up because my party planning, I did call a girlfriend and say, hey, that party, who'll take care of it? So she did. She went over. What a dear friend. And met with a caterer and did everything. Because I didn't. And I blacked out. I was a blackout drinker. And I remember coming to with a bottle of vodka in the side of my seat and a sheriff knocking on that window. And I thought, this is it. And I said, you know what? I've got car trouble. Someone's on the way. And he walked off and left me.
Oh.
And turns out I was out of gas. This person, someone stops and to help, and I happen to be a flower girl in his first wedding. So we start to talk, Amy, hey, and I came to at that point. Gave me gas. My drink was on again. I remember coming to. I thought, I'll go to my friends in Layton, my good old drinking friend, the one that her husband's a correctional officer. I go to her house. I drink some more. I tell her, hey, you know that party tonight? It is a costume party. I'm supposed to dress up. She gets me dressed up. About 9:30 at night, I show up at this party. My kids, I remember looking at my daughter's face. And my son was 12 at the time. You know, I don't really remember seeing him. But I do remember my brother that I love dearly. We're very close. He never says a word. He grabbed me, and he threw me up against a pickup truck. And he said, what the hell are you doing? And I had a hairpiece on, too. And that hairpiece just went, and I said, what the hell are you doing? Straighten up. And so at this point, I realized my car's all, I was in an accident. I hit something. My ex-husband, or he was still my husband at the time, comes and gets me, picks me up, drives me home. And that next morning I said, I need help. I need to get the hell out of here. He said, okay. And I told him, call Nina, is another dear friend of mine. I said, please call Nina. She's the one that went over and set the party up for me. And she came over, and I told them both, you better find a bed for me, and you better find a place now. And I don't want to be around here. Because I knew, I screwed up so bad. You know, all those years I prided myself, because the kids' dad was not so great. I was a single parent. I hadn't got child support for years. I did everything on my own. I drank, but I was the one doing it all. And then all of a sudden, look at me. Look what I let happen to me. So I knew, thanks to that ex-husband, I knew some great rehab. And so there was one in Napa that I liked. And I thought, damn, that place is nice. It's far away. My Portuguese dad can't come and yell at me because I thought, oh, my God. I told my brother, don't even tell Dad, so I'm packed away. I don't want to hear it. And so they called, and they said, bring her the next day. Well, in the meantime, they're being all mean, and they didn't let me drink. And so all of a sudden, I start throwing up and shaking because that's what was happening to me in the morning. And with my vodka, I would drink it, and I have to throw up a lot of times and then drink a little bit more to make it stay down. So they were trying to, start this whole intervention thing a little bit too early for me, and it wasn't working out well. And so they finally, my husband called back to the place, and they're like, don't cut her off. You can't do that to her. So they monitored me all night, whatever. But it was time to go to rehab. My girlfriend came to see me off, those good drinking friends. Hey, you're going to do great. And, I'm like, you girls are sweet. I'm drunk off my ass. You're a little sweet. And so off I went. And I can tell you, I went to rehab, and when I got dropped off, I was bawling my eyes out, drunk as a skunk. And when I got picked up, I bawled my eyes out because I was scared to death to come home. I was scared to death to come home. I can say humiliation made me sober up because I couldn't believe what I let myself get to. I was so wrapped up in the whole obsession of drinking and hiding and buying and this and that I didn't realize my liver was going downhill. My blood sugar was crazy. It was a nice place. They detoxed me nice, I didn't have any horrible spells. When I did feel better, I don't know, like a week later or whatever, and I walked, I showered and fixed myself up. When I walked down the hall, the nurses didn't even recognize me. I had gotten that bad. I was that sick. Anyway, they instilled in me AA, and we had little outings. So we would go to these AA meetings in Napa. They were pretty cool. And I heard some stories. And I remember a speaker that came into the hospital said he was sober for 3 years. And that guy, I remember his face. I remember thinking, what the hell? 3 years? Wow. How do you do that? But I remember that guy said, I always think my last drink through. And when I thought about that, my last drink literally lasted 2 years. I drank around the clock. It was a good night for me if I remember going upstairs. That was in my head. I thought, I didn't drink too much. I did good last night. I remember going upstairs to bed. So I came back to the town where I was born and raised, and I had to go to AA meetings, and I thought, oh, my God, who's going to see me at these things? First one I go into, right off the bat, I see someone, our parents were dear friends growing up. I was so embarrassed. I thought, oh, Jesus, he's going to go tell his parents. And his mother and my mother were best friends. And I thought, oh, what is she going to think of me, And there were no women. I couldn't find any women in AA. So I go to another meeting. It took probably 5 meetings before I found a meeting with women in it, because I thought, I'm the only drunk woman in Hanford. This is really good. But I knew they told me only 90 meetings in 90 days, and I knew I did not want to go back to how I was. And you know, when I, as soon as I got home, my little daughter, you know, she was going into sophomore year of high school, waved her finger at me and said, "If you drink, I'm going to dad." I said, "Well, okay, but you know what? You can't be in charge of that, Aubrey, and you can't worry about that. If I want to drink, I will drink. You can't worry yourself with that." And my son was just damn glad I was home. You know, he was glad Mom was back. That first year was so hard, and for the people that, you know, they're 30 days and under and they're 7 months, that is fabulous. I remember those things. Just make a big deal of every single day because it is important. It really, really is. I used to go to bed early. I kept a calendar. I would mark it some nights at 8 o'clock at night because I was a night drinker and I drank by myself and I wasn't a bar person. I drank at home. Sometimes I was in bed at 8 o'clock at night, wide awake, but I thought, I want to mark that day on the calendar. I did everything they told me to do in AA. I got a Nazi, I'm talking Nazi, sponsor. She kind of got a hold of me, this old bat. And but you know what? She was a blessing to me. You know, I think God puts people in your life at a certain time, and she was put in my life at a certain time because she kept track of me. Shortly after I found someone, I got along with a little better, but... And you know what, I have to say, with my second sponsor that we were just alike, had a great time. I've lost contact with her. She's out there wild. She's lost custody of her kids. She was a manager of a very big business. She's lost it all. So that's how scary this disease is. And I know I treat AA as though it's like I'm a diabetic and it's my insulin. I know I have to come. I didn't like AA at first at all. I thought, this is my life now. I sit around and drink coffee with a bunch of people I don't even know. What a sorry sap I am. And it took a while for me to understand everything and catch on, but I kept going back and I kept listening, you know. And pretty soon, and I got real active in service right away. That old bat, she put me up doing stuff. And I had to pick her up and haul her. Oh, God. But anyway, she put me into service and got me going where I needed to go. My marriage, my husband was very, very supportive for the first year. You know, I always host Christmas Eve for my family, so there was no alcohol that year. And I'll never forget, Christmas Eve was over like at 7, and they all went home. I could tell my brother was drunk when he came in, and did what he had to, went upstairs and fell asleep on my son's bed. But so now I can have alcohol in my home. I can serve it. I can be around it. But that first year, I couldn't do that. My husband and I were big on Friday nights. We went to dinner, and we drank. And, you know, when I got out of rehab, he still wanted to go, and not so much drink. He didn't drink the first year, but I couldn't even sit in those restaurants I used to sit in. You know, everything had to change. Those two good, my sister-in-law that I love to hang around with, can't stand her now because when I'm out, I'm sober, and I'm around her. I understand why we drink. But then my other good girlfriend, Trudy, she was a dear friend to me. We raised our boys together. She helped me a lot as her and her husband. When I was a single mom, we did not speak anymore. We do not speak. I'm not invited to things. That's the way it is, you know. But I look at her life, and I think, well, you're in that same tired circle. And, you know, when I first got to AA, and I hear these, oh, it gets greater later, and all these things, I thought, you know, and I didn't hit a rock bottom financially. I hit it with humility. I hit it with inside me. But it does get greater. I've gone back to school. I'm changing careers. I'm in a master's program now, doing something totally different. I wouldn't have done that if I was drinking, because I always did the minimal to get by. My husband and I, after about a year or two, he came home and he said, you know, I'm not the one with the problem, you are. But that's fair. So he started drinking, and that was okay. He didn't have a problem. But then the guy's trip started, and he was going to Vegas, and he was going here, and he bought a tie. You know, it was just lots of things. And then we just kind of grew apart. And I realized, this isn't what I want. This isn't what I want at all. And so we divorced, that was four years ago, and I don't regret it. We're good friends still. But everything's gone as it's supposed to go, and I'll celebrate 7 years this summer. Thank you. And for the new ones, all I can say is, you know, keep coming back. You hear that. Change your places, people, and things. You have to do that. And you know what? If your friends don't understand, then they're not your friends. They are not your friends. And that's what AA is for, is to make new friends. And that's all I thought. I was told, like, 7 till, so that's it. And thank you for having me.
That was something, huh?